So today, I would like to discuss something that was interesting to me. Now, I'm not sure if you guys will find it interesting, but it's interesting to me. So 2 weeks ago in the last lecture, I ended up talking about Dharma and how important I thought that was, because especially for the leaders and the way in the Mahabharata, this was such a central issue. And there were two comments that were interesting to me after that. Sati wrote me and said, "Ooh, I'm not very sure about this, you know, not exactly, you know," something like that. And I was thinking about that. Now, one of the phenomena that I have seen, especially amongst leaders, is to disregard anything that doesn't fit within their preconceived notion of what is. And since the lecture was kind of like about leadership in using Dharma to establish the proper principles as to what is right, it was relevant. And interestingly, last week, someone did that thing to me. I was giving my feedback on the way they were doing something, saying that this was not the right way to do it, there's a better way to do it. And I was given the feedback of exactly, it's not according to our preconceived notion, therefore there's no need to discuss this in any other way. Now, I didn't reply to Sati in that manner. I mean, my reply to her was much more forgiving, and I understood where she was coming from, so that was not a problem. I just really was thinking about this idea of something coming at you that does not fit within your preconceptions. So then, today, I was thinking there has to be some connections here, because it seems as if my mind is finding these connections everywhere. But I didn't understand exactly what I was seeing. It was kind of cloudy. So I did something that I rarely do. Maybe this is the second or third time I've done that in relationship to lectures. I went to ChatGPT and asked it some questions. So there were two questions I asked it. The first one was, I'll quote, "What are the most important spiritual issues in the world today for spiritualists to consider now?" So the second question was, "What is the most important engagement for an advanced spiritualist in the Eastern tradition?" And so I was more or less asking about issues that affect all spiritualists and what an individual can do, or has to do, or should do, or wants to do. So the responses were really illuminating. When the issues were being delineated, they were very different from when the individual path was being delineated. Almost all of the issues were communal in nature, meaning they had to do with the greater society of spiritualists today. And when I asked about the engagement for advanced spiritualists in the Eastern tradition, it was all personal. Every bit of it was personal. So this was really interesting. We have issues falling into a communal kind of a thing, and the engagement for spiritual advancement falling into an individual kind of a thing. So what is happening is we have once again the group and the individual. Then I went back to the Mahabharata, the version that was being given by Hridayananda Maharaj, that Mahabharata, which is the actual story that is being presented. Now, although the characters within it are going through personal challenges, personal struggles to do what is right, the main theme is doing what is right and what is best for the society. And the society, we're not talking about some religious society. We're talking about all, without exception, the people who were in those kingdoms. So, now this is interesting, because what it is saying is that the greater themes of this very massive and very significant literature is about doing what is best for everybody. And part of that was that there would be brahmanas who would concentrate on teaching individuals how to do what is best for their own personal development and advancement. So I started thinking, the issues were very much related to the leaders, the Kshatriya class, the royal class, the kings, the Rajarshis, under these spiritual principles. And the individual development, the teaching, the training of individuals was very much under the responsibility of the brahmanas. So the Kshatriyas were concerned about taking care of the facility, of facilitating, of protecting the environment within which the entire society could prosper. Now, bear with me a second. I started thinking about ISKCON. Now, in ISKCON, there's very much emphasis on the individual. Self-realization, enlightenment, meditation, study of sacred texts, and ethical living and service and compassion and gurus and transformation. I'm amazed you remembered that. And so, but the other side, the part which holds it all together, it was never trained. Training a lot of individual qualities, but no training for the support of the group. In other words, here, you become a leader. Why? Well, we need one. You're good enough. There, do that. What do I do? Well, you do your best. I always found that fascinating. I would always look around me in these meetings of leaders and stuff, and I would think that practically without exception, not one person in this room was ever trained in any of the arts which are required for leadership. Well, I was also not trained. In fact, anybody who knew me from college days would know that I was number one revolutionary, who did not want all of this stuff. But at the same time, I had training in, it was called social sciences, and political science and history, economics, psychology, and social engagements in sociology. I think I said that. I'm not sure what I said. So the idea was you learn this stuff, and then you learn how it's going bad in the present society. Not that they taught you that, but you figured that out yourself. So when I was thrust into a leadership position, and thrust I was, I tried my best to just keep things going as they were, just to make sure I didn't make any radical changes that would screw up everything. So I tried and I tried. I screwed things up, I fixed it. And then I did something good, then I screwed things up, then I fixed it. It's like being thrown into a kitchen with all these ingredients and you have no idea how to cook. So you just, okay, put this, that. You trial and error. If people eat what you like, if it's good, it's gone. Great. If it's all left over when you're done, fix it. So as you know, at one point, massive conflicts were appearing. And to deal with these required challenging every assumption I ever made and trying to uncover principles which would make it work better, not only for me, but for everybody. But wait a minute, it was already there. That's what this Dharma is all about. This Dharma stuff is all about establishment of society at its most fundamental, basic level. It's not an an accident that Bhagavatam was spoken to Maharaj Parikshit. It's not an accident that most of the stories in it relate to kings and kingdoms or the renunciation of the same. Now, someone may say, well, that just happened to be that way because it just so happened, quote unquote, that Maharaj Parikshit was in this situation. He was about to die from the hands of a brahmana, and therefore Sukadeva Goswami came. It just happened that way. It could have been something else. If you believe that, then you probably also believe in Santa Claus. First of all, there are no such kinds of things going on in these literatures. There are reasons for everything. And if you look at these issues versus the individual that this ChatGPT was bringing up, and you see that the essence of a society boils down to making sure it's protected and making sure it's going in the right direction. That requires power. And that power very much depends on the intelligence and the guidance to make it the most effective force it is. So then when I look back on the ISKCON times, I see that it was doomed to failure in that regard. It could not possibly have worked. But because of that, these incredibly important issues were not properly dealt with. And the relevance of the spiritual organization in modern society is therefore extremely diminished. I'll just read off the things that the ChatGPT said to me. Environmental stewardship, that means taking care of the world you live in and the environment within which you live. This is like a no-brainer. Then social justice and equality, specific words used, compassion, justice, and equality for all individuals, regardless of their situation, and therefore dealing with human rights abuses, inequalities, or discrimination. So these things are like incredibly important, because if you believe everybody is part of God, if you believe everybody is spiritual, then to act without regard to the individuals is contradictory to your belief. Another one here, peace and conflict resolution. That resolving conflicts so that there would be this lack of constant person against person, society against society, nation against nation, which distracts everybody from their true purposes, should be reduced. And to create an atmosphere that promotes personal well-being, to protect that atmosphere. And here's another one which I found very interesting. Technology and ethics. Now, who is going to talk about the ethics of this advanced technology that is taking over the world? Who is going to talk about the morality of it? Who is going to talk about the impact of it on individuals, on nature, on animals, on the world? Now, obviously, we're not talking about the perfect world here. These are just issues that have to be addressed by the spiritual community, not that we're going to solve them all. And the sixth one here is interfaith dialogue and understanding. Not that our religion, we are the only ones who know anything about anything. You know, nobody else matters at all. It's just us all the way. So who cares about them? That may have worked to some extent when there were clear geographical boundaries between religions and cultures. You know, you lived here, they lived there. You just avoid each other until you kill each other. But this is not possible in the age of global interconnectedness. We know everything that's happening everywhere, to everybody, at all times. Of course, news agencies love when there's conflict because it gives them more money. But true spiritualists try to find a commonality, try to find a way to attain harmony between different groups, a cultural harmony, a harmony of practice, a harmony of the same kind of goals. And the last point brought up here is dealing with materialism, how this rise of consumerism, of capitalism, of simply money for the sake of money at the expense of people, at the expense of our growth, dealing with that. So all of this is really important. And yet, although we can believe it ourselves, to put it into practice in a meaningful way requires a social organization or a social commitment, a social contract to make the world a better place through these spiritual principles. And therefore, Dharma. It's not like Dharma is something, you know, you pull off a shelf and then you look at and you think it's like, you know, something from some old book somewhere at some time. It is a fundamental principle for all spiritualists at all times to do something good for the world. So what is very, I would say, exceptional about our tradition is this communion between the individual and the group. And that is exactly the whole point of the Varnashram Dharma, is the external environment creates the perfect atmosphere for each individual's environment. Okay, that all makes sense, but when you start talking about, okay, you'll be a Brahmin and you'll be a Kshatriya, that's meaningless. But if the various groups of people who are already engaged in these various activities understand their work in terms of ethics and morality, in terms of their role within the greater society, this can have a major impact. How to balance all of these different things. This is the responsibility for those who are in each of these different kinds of activities. So I see, here in America at least, you know, we have these like radical Christians who want to make the Bible and everything in the Bible the way in which life is in the society. And it does not matter what you believe or you don't believe. This is what's right, and this is the way it's going to be. So you get all of these conflicts, because here you have somebody thinking, I know what's right, you are all wrong, I'm the only thing that's right, everything else is wrong. So you've got no Dharma there. You've got no actual principle of stewardship, in other words, taking care of the entire society, which is the main principle, giving everybody their place. Now, you may ask, well, okay, why are you talking about this? I mean, what is the thing that has inspired you to talk about this? Well, the thing is my eyeballs. I just look, I observe, I'm aware, and I see everything, everywhere, hinging on the exact same thing, the absolute shattering of Dharma. It's like Dharma the bull, his last leg was truthfulness. In this era of misinformation, disinformation, cheating and manipulation, it's just phenomenal. There is nothing left of Dharma. So we're all kind of swimming around in this flood of chaos. Some people are happy thinking, well, I'll just make a lot of money and protect myself, and that's okay. I don't really care anymore. I can't do anything about it. And Some people are just giving away everything to take care of people in various charities in whatever way they can. So you can look how you see and how you perceive is really important. Therefore, I'm speaking to try to change the perception. You could think everything's going to hell. It's all terrible. We have no chance. It's all finished. This is the way you think when you believe the news or you watch all these movies which are making money on dystopian apocalypse. Or you could look to see the standard of life around the world is much higher than it has ever been before. The way in which life is going on is superior to many things that have ever happened before. Generally, things are moving forward. So you can either absorb yourself in the chaos and have your head swimming in the chaos, or you can look towards the future and find your place in making it better. And that is really important. So sometimes I imagine some young people somewhere catch on to what I've been talking about, and they catch on and they think that maybe this is interesting, and then that makes a little ripple. And at one point, when all these old, useless, terrifyingly incompetent people drop away from leadership positions and these young people come, something good can actually appear. That's my imagination. Because if those young people actually were able to do such a thing, they would just look at this list too, and they would figure out how to do what's right. It's not like it's complicated. So I'm a realist, but I've got to do what I can do in the best way I can do it. And in whatever way I can contribute, I wish to do so. That was what I was thinking of today. So we can take a little break if there are any questions. Honestly, you don't have to ask them if you don't want to, but if there are any, put them in the chat. Okay, we're back. Maha, you there? Howdy. Okay. How do you see, this is a question, how do you see the principle of human rights with the idea of equality going together with the Varnashram system? Well, I mean, I can just blanketly say that human rights are obviously one of the foundations of the Varnashram system. That's the whole point of it. That means everybody has the right to protection. Everybody has the right to their prosperity. Everybody has a right to health and to all things that are relevant to human beings. Now, equality. The problem with the word equality is that it brings too much with it. So I don't like that word equality. It's too complicated. Okay, you can say spiritually we are all equal. That's fine. But when it goes into practicality, equality is not so relevant. I would say everyone has value. Would I say equal value? That's subjective. Let's say you have a father in a small family, does some work and takes care of the family. And then you have a person in charge of a country. They both have value. That father has enormous value to the children and family. That person is very much required. So in the area of value, it's a small area, whereas the leader of the state has value to all members of the state. So the area of the value is much greater. So you get into trouble when you start using the word equality, because equals is a troublesome concept. It's like apples and oranges, trying to make apples equal oranges. You have differences everywhere. So the usage of the word equals is very troublesome. But when you use a very broad-based generic term like human rights, we all have equal right to our human fundamental rights as human beings. Yes. So from that point of view, the leaders in the Varnashram Society ensure that each and every member of the kingdom is taken care of, which is why they used to have open forums where every member of the kingdom could come and speak to them about their grievances or problems. Well, I'm just answering the question now. I'm not trying to glorify that, because we're talking about the ideals. So we're talking about an ideal, not the reality of existence. So without it, ideals, you have nothing to aim for. So from that point of view, ideals are good and therefore worth talking about. I mean, I could go write a whole book about that question, so I'm going to stop there. Okay, next question. In my opinion, we deserve what happens to us. We deserve it. Of course, we can try to improve everything, but we can only improve to the extent that we are allowed to improve from above. I have experienced that someone without much effort has achieved something that a much smarter and more assertive person could never achieve in their life. Definitely true. Why is one born in Zimbabwe and the other in more prosperous countries? Is Zimbabwe that bad? One could say it's their choice, but I have not seen any intelligent one who wants to live worse than others. I just read, maybe 3 days ago, there was this movie director, who was speaking about why some actors make it and some don't, and the difference between the two. He said, more than you could ever imagine, it boils down to luck. You're in the right place at the right time. The others that they thought would be best for the part have something else to do. You happen to catch the eye of someone who needed their eye caught. That's really interesting. That's exactly what he's saying here, that someone without much effort has achieved something that a much smarter and more assertive person could never achieve. Yes, it happens all the time. So this idea that we deserve what happens to us. Deserve. Well, I would not use the word deserve. That's somehow that word is just grading the wrong way. I get the concept, but that word deserve. I would say we attain what we are meant to attain according to the consequences of our previous actions. Okay, maybe it says the same thing. I just don't like that word, that's all. But luck is the exact same thing. It's not like random. It comes at a certain time according to the arrangement of existence. So, yes, I agree. But was there a question, or it was just, that's what I think? That's okay too. We welcome declarations of your beliefs. We welcome them. Okay, next. Screaming capitals. Screaming capitals. These capitals are bouncing off my head and screaming at me, pay attention. Is it possible for this world to change without the intervention of higher powers? Well, no. The world can change just by time. The world is going to change. So you don't need higher powers for change. But that's a cheap answer on my part, because we know perfectly well what is meant here. Can positive change, can good things, can the creation of a proper society happen without the intervention of higher powers? But that was what Dharma was all about, that those kings in that Mahabharata time knew that unless they followed Dharma, that intervention, that support of higher authorities would not come to them. The Asuras are 100% certain. They can do it all on their own. They don't need anybody else's help. And they are very powerful. The Suras are also very powerful, but they don't think that way. They think that they want, they require, they must have the assistance and intervention of higher powers. They call on Krishna, they call on Vishnu. And the Asuras know they will do that, and they depend on it. The Asuras used to say, these demigods are so weak that when we attack them, they'll be forced to call on Vishnu, and when they do, we'll kill him. You gotta love the logic there. But the Asuras are thinking that these Asuras are making so much trouble that we have to call on Vishnu, who'll kill them. So obviously this question was about something else. This question really was, how can we get the higher authorities to intervene and make change? Well, we have to be worthy of that. We have to call that exactly how the Suras do it. That is what we can do. But we also have to make ourselves individually strong so that we can be part of that. We can assist that. And we have to prove ourselves in that way under various challenging circumstances. Not that we just say it or think it. You have to demonstrate it. And that's a really important point. Difficult, though. Oh, we've run out of questions. That's okay. It's all right. You're allowed not to ask questions. And I hope you have a somewhat cool summer so that we don't all burn up. Brains are already in bad shape, so boiling the brain does not help. You need to have cool brain. So goodbye to all of you. Good luck, good health, good happiness.